Paddy Power and the Football Show, the greatest football partnership since Diofen Heskey.
Yes, and welcome along. It is the Football Show. It's Richie McCormack here with you. It's been another one of those weeks in the Premier League, another one of those weekends where sadly talk of VAR dominates and the horrific injury suffered by Andre Gomez during yesterday's 1-1 draw between Everton and Tottenham at Goodison Park. We're going to hear from David Myler and co, who were there on commentary for that game, and get further reaction to the FAI Cup final as well, during which Shamrock Rovers prevailed on penalties against Dundalk at the Aviva Stadium in front of a crowd north of 30-odd thousand. But Pat Nevin joins us on the line this evening. Good evening, Pat.
Good evening, Richie. How are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm a damn sight better, I have to say, than Andre Gomez will be this evening. You were there at Goodison Park yesterday. You saw pretty close up the horrific injury suffered by the midfielder at the, as a result, I suppose, of that Heung-min Son tackle, but not directly because of it. We have to stipulate your view on it. Heung-min Son obviously distraught, most of the players distraught. I don't know if you've been involved in one of those situations whereby everything stops, everybody becomes acutely aware of the horrific nature of what's going on and kind of has to gather themselves afterwards.
Yeah, it happened to me, which was not a lot of fun. It's a horrible feeling. Because he'll have looked down at his foot and the angle it was at was just, sickening, absolutely sickening. I can vaguely remember, I played once, I was near the end of my career, I was with Kilmarnock, and I went for a header, trust me, I actually went for a header. And I went to nod it that way, but I hadn't looked behind me. Someone came in from the back, smashed it in the face. And I was groggy and feeling a bit of pain and a bit sick, and I said to the lads, I'll be okay to carry on. And they all gave me that look of, no, you won't. Half the face had completely gone, smashed in. And it's just, oddly, you don't know yourself because you can't see it if it's your face. But I went to touch my face and it wasn't there. And you see the faces of everybody and you're kind of, not in shock, but the pain's so extreme, you get a weird feeling about it. That I was okay. In comparison, I just had to go and get an operation, get it all flicked back out again. But it's a horrible feeling, when things aren't right, part of your body. I recovered really quickly. I was very fortunate. And that's the thing about it. Some of the ones that look the worst ones aren't the ones that take the longest to recover. Some of the ones that look a little bit, if you snap a cruciate, you can't really see anything, but you might never come back. Whereas you sometimes see leg snaps that are real compound things. I remember really vividly watching Henrik Larsson's snap, and he came back at least as good as he'd been before, and I thought he'll never play again. So you're looking at Gomez one, and the news that has been filtering out just now from the surgeons is they're very happy with the surgery that's gone through today. It's clicked back into place, and if it's a clean-ish break, that's the thing that usually works. But when you're in the midst of that sort of thing, I've seen some bad injuries as well, it's horrible, and you do feel immediately for your friend or your colleague or even your opponent. There's also the big feeling with everybody, and you have to be honest about it. But for the grace of God, go I. It can happen to anyone, anytime. Doesn't need to be professional football. Every time you go out on a pitch, there's a possibility of that happening. And it's that kind of fear somewhere in the back of your mind. You can't live with that fear. You can't think about it all the time. But that didn't have to bring it back to your mind. And it was horrible. And as your build-up was saying there, Richie, I don't put any blame on Son. He did try to tackle and foul, without a doubt, Gomez. He did try and do that. And it was also done through a red mist because he'd had a wee smack in the face before that and he was angry about it. But he certainly didn't try to hurt him and injure him. He just tried to foul him. And it was just a situation of events. He was catapulted forward. His foot was planted. It bent. Ori is coming in as well. It's just a freak. Freaks happening. I don't know if you've come across anyone. I've still not come across anybody in the game, particularly players, who've said Son's a disgrace for doing that. I don't know anyone. And I wouldn't imagine anyone would think that. Because that sort of tackle, everyone, and I mean everyone, has put in that sort of tackle.
It was a frustrated challenge at a specific time of the game. I don't think anybody looking at it, and this isn't down to his reaction and the fact that the guy is distraught as he should be because he's been involved in a situation like that. But again, nobody's looked at that and thought, nobody wants to hang him basically because of this.
Well, nobody social media, you get somebody. Somebody.
Well, I don't think that should ever be used as a fair reflection of modern society. But, you know, general people who actually have a brain in their heads know that
And the nice thing is, yeah, you're right. Everybody from ex-players to anybody who's been in the media talking about it is taking exactly the correct line about it. And we're not being sympathetic to Son for the fact that he was a straw or the fact that we know he's a good lad. You know, he's not that sort of person, and he's not a dirty player either, all that sort of thing. But it's a horrifying thing to happen, and it's a shame for, you know, Gomez. He hadn't been having a particularly good game, but then again, nobody on that pitch had been having a good game. It was a stinker of a game. It was awful, the first half, possibly the worst 45 minutes I've seen for a couple of years. It was absolutely rank. But everything else just went out of your head when that happened. So, you know, it happens now and again. The good things, here's the good things, the positives, right? Time's gone by, that was your finish. These days, surgeons are better. At football clubs, you're going to get the best surgeon in the business who's going to be there sitting, waiting for you to do it right. You will get the best recuperation that anybody could possibly get because the money is there to throw it at you. So if it's going to happen to you, you know, you're very fortunate if you're a professional footballer playing there. There were so many people around them so quickly. You know, he got off to the hospital and he got all the best treatment. So if he's going to come back, and again, the line from the surgeons today is they expect a full recovery.
Yeah, so, extremely well is how they viewed the surgeries going today. So that's a massive positive. We'll get on to the reasons why it was a stinker in a moment, but I just want to concentrate on that Son dismissal, first of all, because Spurs are obviously going to appeal against this one. It was a straight red. Martin Atkinson, the referee yesterday, initially goes to produce a yellow card from his pocket for Heung-min Son for that challenge.
Oh, he did. Produced it.
Yeah. They say the professional game match officials board has since told Sky Sports that despite Atkinson initially removing yellow card from his pocket, it was never officially shown to him. He then showed the red card. The Premier League have stipulated afterwards that the red card for Son was for endangering the safety of a player, which happened as a consequence of his initial challenge. Now, what they're saying there, in layman's terms, is he's looked at the injury and decided that the injury suggests it was a red card decision, which is a dangerous place for referees to be going.
Not only dangerous, but I think completely wrong. You can't do that because in any challenge, that can happen if there are other circumstances. So you can make any sort of challenge, they fall awkwardly. Can you remember the Mo Salah one? You know, Mo Salah, you know, against, you know, he goes down, does his shoulder, and people were saying, yeah, that should be a sending off, he's damn it. Didn't mean he do his shoulder. That's nonsense. It was a yellow card. And if you start going down that line, that madness lies down that line. And I've never heard that used as, you know, as an excuse before for any referees at all. He did produce a yellow card because I saw it. I was standing there. I was standing by that time looking up. And yeah, the yellow card was out. You shouldn't change your mind in that. Having said that, and I can say this for certain, Son was walking off anyway. He wasn't going to carry on. He wouldn't be sent. If he wasn't sent off, he was walking off. He couldn't cope with that.
He was in no condition,
But he shouldn't. But I agree completely with you, and I think with a lot of people in the game and with Spurs, it wasn't a sending off. I mean, I listened back to my commentary. I was commentating on it. And I said, I'd looked at it a couple of times before I saw how bad the injury was. And I said, well, that's a definite yellow card, you know. And then when the red comes out, I said, well, I'll look at it again. Now, there's one interpretation of the law where you can say, if you've been tried to endanger an opponent, it is a red card. Every single tackle that misses its target can be described or explained that way. But it wasn't the tackle that would normally, and most people, and just 99.9% of occasions by 99.9% of referees, they just wouldn't produce a red. So by the laws of the game, you could almost give it a red, but it just doesn't happen. Saying what you're saying, that they went back to it, and because of the seriousness of the injury that followed, I don't think that makes any sense at all. I think that's a mistake, and I think that was wrong to do that. And that strikes me as them trying to get the referee out of a hole. And you shouldn't be doing that. You should be sticking to the laws of the game. Nobody's going to be blaming and shouting and bawling at the referee because he only gave him a yellow card, because we all got it.
Sorry, Pat, that's the thing I don't get, is that if it is, as you say, trying to get the referee out of a hole, I don't think it's a hole that anybody saw Martin Atkinson being in yesterday. If Martin Atkinson had given Heung-min Son a yellow card for that challenge, I think everybody would have looked at it in retrospect, having seen the replays, because God knows people would have looked at it enough times and thought, yeah, do you know what, that's okay. So I don't know what hole the Premier League think they might be digging them out of here.
Just tip exactly. They're covering referees just now because I think they know that the referees are under massive pressure because they're making such mistakes in other areas, particularly VAR. They feel as if they almost have to protect them in everything they do. And it's, if a referee makes an error, and it's a bit of an error, I can understand why he made it, because he was probably quite shocked himself. But don't dig it. I think they're digging it further. I think they're making it worse. You know, just, all right, he got a bit carried away in a moment. We all did a little bit at that time, and all the players did, and everyone around did get very, very upset at the time. But, you know, don't try and do that. Don't try and change history. It's nonsense. And I hope that's something that doesn't, you know, take hold. Having said that, how rare is it that you get a decision that has changed because of the extreme nature of an injury? The sad side of it is that what that could have had, if he's made the decision to change it, to say, well, this is a more serious injury, so I'm going to show a red, that might have made some people think, oh, well, he meant that then. And that's not helping anyone. That's really not helping anyone. And that's a very negative line to go down. So in every way I can imagine it, I think they've got it absolutely wrong, that one. But, you know, hey, it's kind of secondary. Most of us are saying, oh, well, very good, so what, who cares?
Yeah.
Gomez is injured. And that was all that was important. I mean, it wasn't, by a distance, the worst decision that was made on the day. There were worse decisions made on the day. And I have to underline this very quickly just now. The players didn't help. They did not help, because some of the antics of the players on the day, that it's really getting embarrassing. And I'm up here, right, before we'll go into other things in a minute. One law has to be changed. We really need to change one law, right? Clear dive, and it's even caught retrospective, but I give you a 3-game ban. That'll stop the diving, right? Number one. But the one law that I really want changed is, see this thing, it was 5 or 6 times during that game, people went down holding their face with a head injury. My backside, they had a head injury. They're going down there, and anytime players hit, they're just holding their head so that the game stopped. And they're acting. And then every one of them's up running about 2 seconds later. They are acting. Now, this is dangerous. This is very dangerous. Because a couple of times, you know, the referee played on. One of the days someone's going to get a head knock, and the referee's going to think, oh, he's another one acting. And it could be serious. You know, it could be life-threatening. But because of so many of these players pretending it now. So I think now, if you go and look back at it now, and a player's pretending that he's badly injured with a head injury and there's nothing wrong with him and he hasn't been hit, I'd give him the 3-match ban. I would be that extreme about it. It is dangerous and it's unacceptable.
One thing arising from this weekend, we're hearing today that managers from northern-based clubs have been invited for a meeting with Mike Riley, the manager of the elite referees body, PGMOL, who mentioned they're going to be meeting up on Thursday to discuss the ramifications of VAR. Yesterday at Goodison, we saw VAR at its absolute worst, whereby it was being used ad nauseum. It was being used kind of, you would imagine, not for clear and obvious errors. And again, the lack of transparency is something that's absolutely killing the game.
The very first time it was ever used, VAR, in Britain, in the UK, and a game was Liverpool. I think it was West Brom in a cup game. I was there. I was doing the commentary. I remember saying, A, it's too slow, but don't worry, that'll quicken up. Well, it didn't look like that at Goodison. But most importantly, I said, you've got to inform people now. You've got to inform people what's going on. People have paid good money to come in here. They're a big part of what this game is. Do not be arrogant enough to ignore the fans. There's big screens and a lot of the grounds. Show the reasons for it in the big screens, and then that'll either quieten or make understanding anyway. If you've not got a big screen, like some haven't, such as Anfield, it's okay. The referee can go and speak. You see it done in, you know, rugby does it. You do it in the gridiron game in America. It can be done. You've got to treat people with respect that are part of the game. So that was a shambles. That was a mess. And the fact that they've gone ahead with this, with the arrogance of not taking those people into account, is totally unacceptable, especially if I've said it after one game all that time ago. So that, there's no excuse for that. That's just arrogance, not looking outside themselves, taking care of themselves. So big, big mistake that. That has to be changed. This concept now of refusing to go and see the screen in the corner, I mean, I have no concept of why that is a good idea.
Their initial thought on that is that they want to, this is their reasoning, not mine. the officials agreed amongst themselves that if VAR were going to step in and make a decision, that the officials would take it as given that it was worthy of a review from them, and whatever they decided was going to be okay. But then that's the referee on pitch and his two assistants on either flank completely washing their hands of the situation that's going on the pitch, which seems utterly bizarre.
That's not logical. It's not logical, because the logic is clear and obvious. That's what you're looking for, right? Clear and obvious. If the decision's taken on that camera, taking 3 minutes, it ain't clear and obvious. Just it ain't clear and obvious. Referee, get over and look at it. Mm. That's it. And the minute of something that's a debate between anybody there, you cannot then do it. If there's a debate, you cannot say it is clear and obvious. You've got to get the referee over and have a look at it, and you decide on the day. And we're all fine with that. It's okay. He still might make a mistake, but it's okay. The referee's going to be making that decision. It is now, they have made an absolute mess of it. And I'm a great advocate of VAR. I think we need it. I think it's important. Remember, in the midst of all this, we're all getting really annoyed. It's getting most of them right. In actual fact, if you look through this season, we're talking about the ones that get wrong every week, and it is every week. Hmm. But have a look at the ones that are getting right. They're getting plenty of them right. So loads and loads of decisions that they would have got wrong in the past are now getting right. So that's a positive. We're ignoring that. So we can't really ignore that. That's unfair. But at the moment, the ones that are making a mess of, it's just embarrassing. And most of them are quite easily cleared up. I mean, the handball for what should have been a penalty kick for Everton, and the laws of the game that I've seen used over the last year or two, clear penalty kick. I mean, I didn't like it. It wasn't deliberate, but deliberate's taken out of it now. That's a penalty kick. It's handball, unnatural possession. I know they said there was a nudge. There's a nudge in every single situation. It's bizarre. So they've got that one wrong. Also, the penalty kick that should have been given when Richarlison was taken out of the play as well. No idea. Now, I'm not being an Evertonian against Spurs. Given the other way, I was saying there was exactly the same things up the other end, but it was silly. I know why he didn't give it in the first place. He didn't give it in the first place because Richarlison was throwing himself about like a rag doll all afternoon, and it was really annoying. Doesn't matter. You got to go and have a look at that in the video, and you'll see it. Do you know what? I've always understood the argument against VAR. I understand it more and more and more as it goes on, but I'd be gutted if we ditch it now because of the inadequacy of the official.
I don't think we've come far enough down the road that I don't think we're in a ditching scenario. I think
A few people do.
I know. There's a few people, and a few people describing it as Brexit. But it'd be along with, I go with what your former teammate Martin Keown was saying on Match of the Day 2 last night, which is along the lines of what you're pointing out there, is that rugby, and even we saw it last night, like our women's hockey side are involved in an Olympic qualifier with Canada, and the very last penalty stroke of a shootout where Ireland think they'd already qualified for the Olympics is brought back to a video review. And we get to see the video reviewer, we get to see her have a conversation with the on-pitch referee, and there's a transparency about it all whereby even if we don't necessarily come off the better of the decision, we have to respect it because we've heard their reasonings for these things. And it's the same with rugby. You hear the conversation, the back and forth, say between like Jerome Garcés and whoever's up in the booth on Saturday morning in the Rugby World Cup final. You know what's going on. With Premier League, we're in a winner position watching it on TV that even fans in the stadium, who are the ones that you're supposed to be pleasing the most, aren't in a position whereby we get to see the replays. But the fans in the stadium aren't seeing the replays. The fans in the stadium aren't hearing any conversation. They're just left in this 3-minute void of nothingness, which is like completely letting the air out of the balloon in terms of atmosphere.
It is arrogance. Mm. It is arrogance towards the fans. How dare you treat them like that? I mean, I'm really angry about it. How dare you treat them like that when every other sport says... Now, I know the old argument. Well, there's two arguments. One, they've not all got video screens. Most of them have, and also you can talk. Right, that argument's gone. That doesn't exist, that argument. The other argument is, you can't trust football fans. They'll get violent and they'll fight. Nonsense. You're more likely to get annoyed by not being given the information than you are to be given the information. And treating them with that lack of respect, it's just the insularity of it. And now that's something that has been the case within, you know, officiating for years. It was a big, big thing in FIFA for years, and it always has been. You know, you often get a feeling as a player, FIFA hated the fact that footballers had to play football. They would have just liked to organise this sport with our officials, you know, get the money in. Footballers just kind of get in the way, and the actual people that do it and the fans were even lower down the pecking order than that. It's just too insular, and it's up to everyone, and it's fans, and it's ex-players, and it's everyone in the media, like yourself. We've got to make a noise about this. We've got to say, you people have to listen to us. Your arrogance of thinking you know better than us is wrong. We in this situation know better than you, and we have done for a long time.
We have to actually talk about the game itself, which seems almost, not secondary, but almost in third and fourth place in terms of what we need to talk about from yesterday. Goodison, neither of those sides are where they want to be at the minute, and I don't think either showed enough to suggest that they're going to be getting out of their current situation anytime soon.
Travesty if any team had actually won that game. Nobody deserved to win that game. There was things happening in that game. The whole of the first half, it's one of those things where if you go and watch a kid's game and somebody puts a 3 or 4 pass move together, you applaud because it's a kid's game. It was kind of a bit like that. No one was putting any amount of intricate passing or good tactical play or good skillful play together. It was like a bunch, and it was hard to explain why, because that's my job, to try and explain why that's happening. Lack of confidence, managers putting out teams that are, you know, set up not to lose, that sort of thing. You can put a million things in, just a whole bunch of players. I mean, I spent my time thinking, see, if I have to pick a man or a match in this game here, I'm going to have a nightmare. And I would say there was one guy, I would say maybe one defensive midfielder might have actually not been terrible. You know, that's the only thing, because defensively you can maybe make the odd tackle and that's your job. But creatively, it was a shambles. There was 2 or 3 things in the second half. Somebody said to me afterwards, VAR ruined that game. I said, didn't need VAR, man. That game was a shambles anyway. So there's nobody, and all the players you want to be playing, you know, Eriksen. I adore Eriksen as a player, but honestly, absolute shadow. Even Dele Alli scores a goal, but again, shadow of the player he was. I was watching Digne. Now, if I asked you or anybody listening or watching, what do you think of Digne? Well, he gets up that line and he puts great crosses in. His delivery was shocking. From free kicks, corner kicks, you name it. I'm thinking, everybody is good at something, can't even do what they're good at, honestly. And then eventually Digne does put a good ball in, and when he does, they score a goal. But it was, they're a mess at the moment. Both teams are a real mess at the moment and look miles away from getting out of it.
We have to touch on the Premier League leaders, Liverpool. They encountered an interesting VAR decision of their own, to say the least, at Aston Villa on Saturday. But there is an element of that side that every champion side has, which is they never know when they're beaten. They never give up. There was a stat I saw earlier on today that suggested that they haven't been behind by more than one goal since the 27-18 season. I think it was when they lost 2-1 to Manchester United. So it shows the level of determination and tenacity that's about that side that will get them another trophy this season, regardless of whether it's the Premier League one or not.
Yeah, and they actually just look stronger now. I mean, the fact that they've been such a good team and they actually look a better team now. They might not be hammering teams 5-0 all the time, but they are fabulous at finding ways. I mean, quite impressed with that comeback. But the game against Spurs, I thought that was absolutely stunning. The amount of chances they created, the amount of pressure they put on after Spurs had got the early goal the other week. And they just keep on doing that. And if you're playing against a team that put in that amount of opportunities, chances, creativity, crosses, everything, and it just keeps on coming, keeps on coming. It's not a fluke that you scored in the last 5 minutes of games. That, people always think, oh, you were lucky, you got the last 5 minutes. That is the most likely time to score an important goal, because that's when players are tired. That's when, if you're going to have space in a game, the most likely 5 minutes of any game to get space in a game is the last 5 minutes, for that specific reason. So, you know, keep on going, and there's a belief that you're going to do it. So everything about them is brilliant to see. And even with Salah not 100% at the moment, they can do that. They've got so many players in the team that, you know, they, maybe if they're off a little bit, they'll get by. And, you know, we keep on saying it, as long as they don't get Virgil van Dijk injured, they are going to be hell of a hard to stop. And I can't wait to see this weekend's game with Man City. The one thing I will say, and any Liverpool fans out there, I've heard different views from them. They've got 6 points ahead at the moment. If they beat Man City, 9 points, it's going to be really hard to... Are Liverpool going to sit in and play in the break? Or are Liverpool going to play like Liverpool against Man City? It's kind of... It's got to be worth a chance, hasn't it? It's got to be worth having a go and not thinking, well, City are better than us as a football team. You've got to stand up to them this time. I hope they do anyway. Just, and for selfish reasons, I want to see two great teams, because City ain't going to sit back, are they?
No.
I would love to see two teams going at each other.
Guardiola's already stirring the pot after their win, which is narrow in and of itself on Saturday. He was asked about Liverpool and about the mentality that keeps them in games, etc. And he just casually dropped in a little reference to diving, you know, as you do when you're an opposition manager in such a position. Is it something that Liverpool are worse at than others, or is that Guardiola trying to just get the first dig in?
Nah, they're not worse than others. I mean, man, he dives. You know, he does. Mm. No, I don't think he can hide it. He got booked at the weekend for doing it, and it was disgraceful. Again, I would be harder than they are on it. I think it should be sending off, or even afterwards, just, you know, look at it again and say it's a match ban, three match ban, whatever. But look around the league. You know, don't care who your team is. It's there. I've watched Chelsea. Not the last time he did it, but I've seen Callum Hudson-Odoi do it. Yeah, but you need to go and keep on carding them. He didn't do it with that push recently, but he's done it before. I've watched every team's got players that have done it. Every single team's got players. So don't push it at Liverpool. However, the main games, that's perfectly reasonable. Do you know if no one in your team dived and the Guardiola said, oh, you watch out for diving, then you can have a go at them. You can have a go at them if one or two of your team actually do dive. So he's right to go and throw that in there. And if I was Klopp, I wouldn't say he doesn't dive. I would say, are you sure your team's whiter than white as well?
Yeah, that's the thing. Of sides that you're going to point that out about, I think City will probably be as guilty and as culpable as anyone else. The hope is, from if you're a Liverpool supporter, Jurgen Klopp's had, a bit of a proclivity to time play the fixture rather than play the actual opposition in front of them. We saw that at Old Trafford to a degree a couple of weeks ago, whereby it was a really poor Manchester United side. And the Manchester United side, they didn't have any ambition about trying to go and win the game. But because it was Manchester United at Old Trafford, all in capital letters, there was a sense that Liverpool were playing that occasion a little bit more than they should have done.
Yeah, I mean, you're really trying hard to find out negatives about Liverpool, aren't you? And now and again, you have a dip. And it may well be you play against the Manchester United. That team, they were really up for it. That was the most up for a game you'd seen for months, since probably the first game of the season from United. Their game plan actually worked quite well, you know, with the two sort of split strikers, and it kind of slightly confused the tactics that Liverpool were kind of using. But yeah, they're human beings. They are a very good team, but they are human beings as well. And now and again, you'll play the fixture. It's a real shame if that's the one thing that actually eventually gets them down in the league season. I don't think it will be. I just think for the vast majority of games, they're comfortable and confident that they'll go and try and win it. The fixture that they have to worry about, the only one really now, between now and the end of the season, Man City home and away. I don't think they'll play any other fixtures. I think they'll just go and play the teams.
Yeah. Yourself this week, I'd imagine Chelsea and Ajax is going to be your main port of call.
Well, I've got a busy week this week. So I was at the Everton game.
Yeah.
I was DJing the night before in East London, and then I had to get to the Everton game. Up in Scotland today, back at Ajax, Chelsea tomorrow. Then I'm doing Norwich on Friday night, and then I'm Chelsea again on Saturday. So four games in 8 days. This is more tiring than when I played, but they're all great games. The Ajax one should be a cracker. Ajax are a better team usually away from home than they are at home. Chelsea at the moment, I mean, I've said it a few weeks ago on this show, Chelsea are in serious danger of becoming liked. Really worrying. They're a joy to watch, aren't they? And the last game, the last two games, you're watching them with your chin on the floor. I'm not seeing them playing beautiful football like that. I don't know how long. I just don't know ever. They are a joy to watch. Attitude is always brilliant. Even the goal they lost this week was trying to play out, passing the ball from their own goal line. That's how they lost the goal. Now, some people will shout, oh, get in the Rose Ed. The reason why they are a good team is because they always play out from there. And that's how it's like City. They always play out from there. Now and again, you'll lose the odd goal. So I don't want Kovacic and Jorginho to stop doing that. So they're at the moment, we were waiting. A lot of us had watched Pulisic quite a while. It wasn't a question of if, definitely a question of when. It's now happening with him. You know, Tammy's in fantastic form up front. For me, there is only one concern for them, and it's, I think, the most important player on the team for quite some time has been Jorginho. He's going to be missing the game at Palace at the weekend, so they won't be as good to watch then. But the whole way through the team, they're just fun. They're just enjoyable. They're just positive. They're just stunning me, because before the start of the season, I'd have thought mid-table. And you look at them now and you feel like an idiot having said that.
Yeah. Pat, do you know what? I review myself as something as a progressive, something, you know, a little bit on the liberal side. Liking Chelsea is going to be still a stretch for me, regardless of how well they play in the pitch. It's just one of those things.
Hey, former Everton and Chelsea player, I love watching Liverpool. I'm okay with that. I love watching Liverpool. I watch in the last 10 years, I can tell you right now, you know, David Silva was my favourite player. You got to put it behind you. You got to, you know, I understand that.
I'll try, Pat. That's all I can promise you is that I'll try.
And
I'll give it my best.
Say, don't like Chelsea, enjoy their play.
There we go.
I possibly do that type dichotomy. Do it that way.
It's a good way of putting it. Pat Nevin, thanks very much.
Paddy Power and the Football Show. The greatest football partnership since Geoffrey Heskey.
Welcome back. Now, we've heard from Pat Nevin and we continue our Premier League coverage because David Myler was with Dave McIntyre in Goodison Park yesterday. Yes, Dave and Daver. And the pair spoke after the game about the horrific injury to Andre Gomez and how difficult his return might just be.
Okay, David, first half, we won't talk about it. There was nothing of any consequence that took place. A lot to get through in the second half, and the vast majority of which surrounds VAR, unfortunately. There were some decisions today that VAR checked and didn't give Everton's way in particular, which we thought they should have got. Then there are a couple of incidents that we felt should have been checked and weren't checked. In its current guise, there must be serious doubts about VAR and the way we are reaching calls or not getting to them at all.
Especially if you're an Everton, you know, fan or player, you know, they obviously had the decision last week go against them, and then today there's 2-3 incidents. You know, we could talk about the handball first with Ali. I think that's a penalty. His hand is above his head. Hits his hand. It's not like whether or not Mina is going to get on the end of it. His hand is still in an unnatural position, and it's a handball. Then there's the incident where Richarlison turns Davinson Sanchez inside the box. To me, he takes a swipe at him, pulls him down. Martin Atkinson doesn't give anything. It goes on, but the problem is I don't know if that's being checked. Is Martin Atkinson going to be told, look, you've missed this, go back? There's just so much. And then, you know, obviously there's the unfortunate injury to Andre Gomez. Which is never nice to see. But then, like Son, I believe, Son came in to tackle him, and it's the way Son has sent him, he's gone into Aurier, which has caused the injury. But then he's given him a red card. It's like, is that checked then? Like,
that could have had serious repercussions for Tottenham, for example. If it had happened early in the game, they would have been unfairly down to 10 men. Also, I know we're not sure that Heung-min Son would have been in the right frame of mind to continue in the game anyway, given how upset he was by what had happened to Andre Gomez. But you're right, it's so unlike the TMO situation in rugby, whereby you can hear exactly what is being discussed between the referee and the television match official. So whether or not you agree with the decision, you can hear exactly how they've reached that call. We're here in Goodison Park today, you and I were watching the monitor, we were looking at all the replays and the VAR checks, yet we're left bewildered by the ultimate decision.
Yeah, but it's even that, the Ali handball, it's taken 4 or 5 minutes. It shouldn't take that long. Like, we have a monitor in front of us, I've seen it. I said, it's a handball, it's a penalty. Like, rugby is not perfect, but they're a lot better than the way football is. And you know what's wrong with hearing what Martin Atkinson's saying? Do you know what I mean? It's almost as if we don't want to point the finger at someone to say you're wrong, but you know, let's try and like find a, you know, a common ground that, you know, we can hear the conversation between Martin Atkinson and, you know, Stockley Park, whatever. That it's, is it a penalty? What do you think? I think it might be a foul. I think, and then it's just, then at least once they make a decision, there's a bit more, you kind of understand. Whereas at the moment we're sitting here and we don't know why, you know, it wasn't given. We don't know, like you had said on co-commentary at the time, that you felt it was a foul, it might have been a foul. But then if it's a foul, then surely, you know, Spurs have a free kick, it doesn't go for a corner. So it's just so much inconsistencies, and I feel Everton have really, you know, been hard done by today.
We see in the case of UEFA and FIFA, the referee, if the VAR assistant feels that there's a case to be at least looked at, the referee's called over to the side of the pitch and a monitor is presented to him, and then the referee ultimately makes the call, which is in a way similar to what happens in rugby, because the referee will be in conversation with the TMO, but he's also looking at the big screen in the corner of the field as well and can come to his own conclusions. Is that something that should be looked at from a Premier League point of view, that it's not done remotely like it is, say, in the NFL, or it's done here, that you look at a monitor and the referee then can actually see for himself what's being looked at?
Yeah, 100%. Like, these people who are in the different areas in Stockley Park, wherever it is, they're all referees as well. Surely they're all mates, so they're obviously trying, like, I would think, this is my own opinion, that surely they're trying to help one another out and say, look, you might have gotten that one wrong. I think that's a penalty. And then surely you have enough respect in your mate to say, yeah, okay, then I'm with you. But there should be a monitor at the side of the pitch. Like, the length of time it's taking for Martin Atkinson to get the decision through, or whatever the conversation he's having with someone, surely he can walk over to the side of the pitch and check a monitor and just, you know, have the various different angles. It's the Premier League. There's more TVs here nowadays. The coverage is phenomenal. Everything's available to them. He can surely look at a screen and say, I believe it's this. And at least then, you know, if he gets it wrong, at least, you know, we can hold our hands up and say, do you know what, he's actually looked at it, in his opinion, that is a penalty, or it's not a penalty, or if that's a foul, that's not a foul. But at the moment, it's completely up in the air. Nobody knows what exactly is going on.
Finally, like, when it comes to goal line technology, it's either a goal or it's not. Yeah. The referee's wrist watch buzzes. It's black or white. When it comes to offside, almost all of the time, there was one or two decisions, but generally 9 out of 10. Well, the technology shows you. Firmino one was an odd one.
Yeah.
Technology shows us that he's either offside or he's not.
Yeah.
Do you believe in the premise of VAR, or would you like to see the system scrapped and boiled down to just those black or white decisions that are no longer open to interpretation?
I do like VAR for certain instances, because it gets you the correct decision.
If it
gets you the correct decision. Now, if you remember back to the goal Chelsea scored, I can't remember who's against now, it might have been Norwich or something, where it was 35 seconds previous Mason Mount was offside. That then is coming too long. To me then, the linesman has missed it. That's just a human error. Do you know, it's unfortunate. The speed of football is just too fast for them to keep up all the time. But to answer your question, I would like VAR to stay, but I want it sharpened up. There has to be more. We have to know what we're using, or what they're using. We have to know what the structure is. At the moment, it's too all over this place.
Thanks, David.
No problem. Thank you.
Dave and David there. Milo and McIntyre at Goodison Park after Everton's 1-1 draw with Tottenham. Stephen Doyle was on commentary for us in the early game yesterday between Crystal Palace and Leicester City, in which James McCarthy came off the bench for his 7th appearance this season. And after the game, the Irish midfielder spoke to Stephen about his return to football after a long injury absence of his own.
Irish midfielder James McCarthy, well, look, it's been a while since we've seen you around the Irish setup. Obviously that's down to just really unfortunate run of injuries you've had.
Yeah.
It's been great to see you get some game time over the last few weeks. How have you felt yourself, just from a physical perspective?
Yeah, it's getting there now, to be honest. Feeling good, training every day, and it's just about when I get my chance, I need to take it.
You got out there today, I know obviously it was a tough game to come into. Leicester City were really on the front foot throughout the 90 minutes. How did you feel you did yourself? You did get a couple of touches in there.
Yeah, well, it's difficult coming on as a sub. The main thing is, as a team, and we wanted to try and get an equaliser, but unfortunately Leicester broke on us and they scored. But we need to regroup again, and we go again next week away to Chelsea. It's a tough game, but obviously we're disappointed with the result today.
I suppose across the season, you know, while today's result didn't go in your favour, it's been a pretty decent season for Crystal Palace overall.
Yeah, we've started well. We need to make sure we get back to winning ways as soon as possible, obviously. It's a tough league, and the games are coming thick and fast. Obviously, an international break coming up, but we've got a big game away to Chelsea, and we need to go there and try and address a few things.
You played the full game against West Ham there recently out in the London Stadium, I should say. But you play pretty well. You must be pretty happy with that performance as well.
Yeah, as I say, it's just nice to play. It's been a long time, and it was nice to get 80 odd minutes. But the team's done well, and obviously, as a squad, when the chance comes, then I need to hopefully try and take it and try and stay in the team. But as I say, the team's doing well, and when I get a chance, then hopefully I can take it and try and stay in.
Are you on a particular plan now, which is regarding the amount of minutes that you can play over a particular amount of games?
No, not so much. As I say, I'm training every day, and I feel good, and as I say, it's nice to be back out there and getting minutes here and there. But as I say, it's about building up these minutes and trying, making sure I can get a consistent run in the team.
Yeah, because is it, you know, does it take a while maybe for you to get out of the pitch, get used to kind of taking challenges, and you took a heavy one there this afternoon?
Yeah, well, it's just part and parcel of the game, and I feel good, as I say, and I'm training day in, day out, and as I said, when the chance comes, then hopefully I can take it.
I believe Mick McCarthy was in touch with you.
Yeah, he's been in touch a few times. Obviously, he's saying to me I need to get playing week in, week out, and as I say, it's the most important thing just now is just getting back to playing week in, week out with the club, and then international take care of itself.
Is it nice though to know that Mick does have you in mind?
Yes, yeah, it's always nice when the manager rings up and makes sure everything's going well and wants you to be playing week in, week out and get back to playing regular games, and then as I say, that'll take care of itself, international football.
Because your last cap was 3 years ago against Moldova. Has it been frustrating just watching Ireland's progress while you haven't been able to play?
No, it's nice to see the boys are doing well, and we've got a big game this month, and as I say, it's good to see the boys doing well, but as I say, the most important thing just now is me playing week in, week out with the club, and as I say, the international will take care of it itself.
So Mick has you in that provisional squad, like, has he given you any indication now, or do you feel maybe is it even still a bit too early to be kind of coming back to a full Irish squad when he does trim down those numbers?
No, as I say, I need to play for the club, and the international will take care of itself. As I say, I need to get back playing week in, week out with the club, and then we'll see what happens with international.
But if he did give you the call up for that final squad, would you be happy to come in?
Yeah, well, as I say, the most important thing for me just now is playing club football. And once I'm back playing regular, then I look to try and get back in that squad.
James McCarthy there, speaking to Stephen Doyle. He himself, of course, was injured, was McCarthy at Goodison Park as well. Coming up next, we'll be turning our attention to yesterday's FAI Cup final.
Paddy Power and the Football Show, the greatest football partnership since Duff and Heskey.
Welcome back to the Football Show. It was a dramatic end to the League of Ireland season yesterday, with Shamrock Rovers defeating league champions Dundalk in the FAI Cup final on penalties. Rovers' first time taking the famous trophy home since 1987. After the game, Stephen Bradley spoke to the media about the match itself and started with the dramatic penalty shootout and Alan Manis's heroics.
Yeah, we've been doing them all week. And genuinely, Alan's been saving the majority of them. Even yesterday in training, I think some of the players stayed out an extra half hour because he kept saving them. So we knew when I went to penalties, we knew we had a great chance, because he's obviously so good in that situation. Yeah, I think in the first 10 minutes, 15 minutes, it could have been two or three. I think we had two across the goal. Aaron Green's one past the post, Ronan's one 2 yards out. But like I said, if you don't score against them, the champions for a reason. They stay in the game. They know how to do that. That's years of experience. And you only get that know-how by winning things. And that's why I felt today was so important that we got over the line.
Steve, at the end, you were just able to stand back, watch the players lift the trophy. They all had their little kids with them as well. I'm sure you've had them with your own family since, but just take some time to take it all in.
Yeah, look, it's not the reason I do that. It's not about me, it's about them. It's about that group. I give them jobs, but they have to cross the line. They have the ones that have to show the courage and the character to play the way we ask them to play. And they do that, no matter what the occasion. I know at times they get scrappy, that's a cup final, but I think the majority of the game they brought their identity, and like I said, you can't sit here and take credit for it, because it's them that has to cross the white line and do it and show the courage to do it. So I felt when they won it, it was their time.
And how were you feeling the immediate seconds after Gary O'Neill scores the penalty?
So many emotions, joy, happiness, sad. So many emotions going through my body. Yeah.
How come sad?
Just my mother, I'd love her to be here and see that and witness that, and she's obviously not. So that's the bit of sadness, but I know she'd be proud of what we've done. We obviously have to work, we want to go and win, build on this now and go and win wherever we can win next year. But I think we've got to understand as well, if you take the games, there was a period in the season where we get a player sent off for the ball hitting him in the head. That means we're missing six players up in Dundalk with injuries and suspensions. Four of them are defenders. So it has a knock-on effect, and within a week you lose three games. So I think people need to really take the emotion out and analyse the season for what it was. And if you did that, there's not that big of a gap. Like I said, I think the biggest gap and the biggest obstacle we had to overcome was understanding how to get over the line, how to win the big game. And we've done that today. And like I said, you can't give that to people. They have to earn it. And we've earned that today. And I honestly believe this group will only get better, stronger and grow from this. We have everybody out there today signed up for the next 2 years, some 3 years. We're very, very happy with the group. We want to add, we want to push on. But we're very, very comfortable where we are with every one of them players in terms of the contract situation.
Can it be one of the great Rovers teams?
Look, it's very early to say, but we have to do a lot to be spoken about in that class. But I genuinely believe this group has the quality and the belief now and the desire and the courage to really push on and make this be the start of something special for this club again and this group. Honestly, unbelievable credit must go to the board and people like Steve McPhail, who have, when we sat down from day one and we had a plan, we knew it wasn't a quick fix. We knew it's not about just getting a team, it's about changing the culture and getting this club back where it belongs, and not just getting it back for a night, getting it back that we can sustain success. And we knew it'd take time. We genuinely did. We sat down, we knew there's going to be bumps in the road. But when them bumps came, genuinely the board members or people at the club are ringing me the next day and saying, be calm. We know what we're doing, we know where we're going, we see what's happening here. And when you have that backing and that belief in you, it's very, very easy to do your job because you can make clear and really good decisions. You're not acting for tomorrow, you're acting for what's coming down the road, and that's what we've been able to do.
Victorious Shamrock Rovers manager Stephen Bradley there speaking after their win in the FAI Cup final at the Aviva Stadium yesterday. His counterpart Vinnie Perth also spoke after the game, and he chose to look ahead rather than to focus on falling short of an historic treble.
Yeah, I suppose obviously there's a big sense of disappointment for many reasons. I suppose we didn't feel we were our very best today, and some for obvious reasons, some just that's the way it goes. So just disappointment. Very proud to lead the team into the stadium today. Real honour for someone like me, who many is unaware I've come from in football. So to lead it in here was really proud. And to be honest with you, after the year we've had, I'm very proud leaving the ground as well. So it's just been one of them, just one of them days that didn't go away.
When you said those on Wednesday,
yeah. Yeah, I think I'd be accused. The way the modern world has gone, I'd be accused of making excuses. There's certain things there that I wouldn't be mad happy about, and I think we've got to fix some of the issues. But to be honest with you, the only one I'd probably complain about is Patrick McElhenney not making the cup final today. I spoke very loudly about that at the time. He got injured in the semi-final of the FAI Cup. We played Shamrock Rovers on the Monday, and that disappoints me for Patrick. And we have to look after our players. The Rovers game was our 16th, I think, in 48 days. So there's no need for. We've only played 4 games in the last month, so that's disappointing. But again, as I said, we need to be very careful. It's been Rovers' day, and I'm very conscious that they've done what they've done, and they deserve the plaudits tonight and tomorrow morning.
Michael Duffy scores that goal, literally last kick, having McAnuff
scored
the penalty. What do you mean
by
that stage? You've got to try and give your players a team talk immediately after that.
Yeah, I felt, fitness-wise, I felt we were ahead of them there, and particularly in the injury time. I thought we were very good in terms of... Sorry, wrong save, but I thought we were very good. I thought we got control back of it in extra time. And we probably just weren't clinical enough in the final third, picked out a couple of wrong passes and... but our fitness levels, I thought, were outstanding today, and didn't start the game well, but we grew into it, and we finished the game with it probably a disjointed midfield, and we lacked that sort of cutting edge, and it's disappointing. We had a big chance, I think, with Georgie Kelly at the end, and I haven't seen it back. So look, we had a go today, and it just wasn't our day.
And
you've had
experience in penals in the Sports Cup final this year to win it against Cork here a couple of years ago to lose it, which is also lottery, unfortunately
you're on the
wrong side.
Yeah, listen, the thing about penalties is that, or the thing about winning cups and winning doubles or trebles or whatever they are, you need certain things to go your way, you need a little bit of luck. We didn't get it today, but as I said, that's just the way it goes. Full credit to them, they'll enjoy the next couple of weeks, and we'll refocus for Linfield next week. That's our job.
Do you see them as being a bigger threat in the league next year?
No, I don't think. I said from the start, I don't think today was the season-finding game. You know, we have got areas to improve in our squad, but myself and the chairman have been working on that in the last month, and we're very, very, very close to improving our squad. So, I don't know. People will make their own conclusions, but I mean, ultimately, when we won the league, we went 17 points clear, and. I don't think that was a far off reflection on where we are as a club, in my opinion, but they'll obviously have a different opinion.
Just on that, I mean, through the season we were manifesting a better team, but today they were better when they started. In the first half they were a better side probably. Do you put that down to more to them that they you know, came into the occasion, hit the ground running, or was it partly down?
I think at times they can look the better side. Because, you know, the way they keep the ball, the way they play. But I think, listen, I haven't seen the game back, but we felt that turnovers was a massive opportunity for us to counter-attack and get after them. And I think that's where we probably lacked that little bit of composure when we got into the final third stages today. You know, we won the last league game. And did 60% of the ball, and Dan Massey hit the post to go 4-1 up. Yeah. So I think we found a way to play against them. I'm not too concerned about that going forward.
Paddy Power and the Football Show, the greatest football partnership since Geoff and Heskey.